counsel?
We're ready.
Please. Good morning.
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 Morning, Your Honor. Chief Judge Moore, Judge Irwin, Judge Bishop. I'm Greg Garland. I represent the plaintiff appellant. We've got kind of a simple 402 question for you this morning, but with far-reaching implications in medical malpractice cases. It's the concept of discussing matters that relate to the consent process that goes through in these cases when it doesn't bear on any of the issues in the case. Whether someone talks to a patient about what the possible outcomes are or what the risks are irrelevant for purposes of determining whether a procedure is done correctly. In our case, it was the advancing of a colonoscope through someone's colon that perfed a colon. So the only issue is whether it was pushed too hard or not. And that was the sole issue in the case, except the judge allowed significant testimony in about what are the things that a physician, what do you tell people in general? What do you tell them about the risk? What do you tell them about the possible outcome? What do you tell them about what could happen to them? What the damages are? What was the relevance of that? That's our problem. That's a very simple issue here. All we want to do is keep these cases as clean as possible, try them on the facts and not other erroneous pieces or extraneous pieces of information. And this is a very typical situation. You're going to see it in the future, too, when they come up with their assumption of the risk defense, because that's the new theory that if you can't get the consent forms in, you're going to allege an assumption of the risk in a way to get them in the back door. And when you're going to see those and that comes up, all the jurisdictions are finding that not to work either. But right now we're stuck with the situation of zero probative value of information that comes in with serious potential to, confuse the jury. Now they think that it's a waiver, because before we were keeping the consent forms out, which all the judges keep out now, even though there's no law on it in the state, they're doing it uniformly. Because before, they'd pull the consent form out and go, she consented to the procedure, as if it's some kind of assumption of the risk and waiver of their responsibility to perform things non-negligently. So the only issues in front of you is that. We had motions in limine on this. The judge refused to rule on them. So we're faced with dealing with this stuff somewhere on the fly. But if you're letting irrelevant information in, irrelevant information equals confusion, which equals unfair prejudice, which equals reversible error. So all we're saying is give us a new trial and instruct the judge not to allow any of the testimony in about what the doctor normally does, what he usually and customary does, or what it's usually customary in his practice to do, or across his area of expertise, his specialty, and what they're allowed to tell jurors in court.
Mr. Garland?
Yes.
Assuming we agree with you that it was error to allow that evidence in, wasn't the jury instruction sufficiently curative of the problem?
No, ma'am. We were stuck with that thing because now she's let all this evidence in, then she says, I want to cure it with this jury instruction. So we're kind of stuck in a situation where if we object to it, now we're letting an instruction that comes in that mentions nothing about it, and if we consent to it, somehow it's argued that it's curative. It isn't. You can't unring this bell because she's already let it in. You can't just say, forget about it. It's not going to work. Anything else?
What was problematic with regard to the instruction? I'm looking at it.
Okay, so look at the last part.
All right. I'm looking at the fact that a patient goes through with a procedure having been advised of the risks of such procedure does not change or alter the duty of the healthcare provider to possess and use the care, skill, and knowledge ordinarily possesses.
About as good as you can do with the circumstances she had in front of her, but the answer was not to let that stuff in, because now you're drawing further your attention to it by saying, now you've heard about it, forget about it.
But you agree that courts have allowed evidence in that appellate courts have subsequently found to be erroneous, but if a jury instruction sufficiently cures the problem, then reversal isn't warranted.
And you're going to have to make that call, Your Honor. We don't think that's the case. If that's the law in the case, then they'll get everything in. They'll run, and they'll get everything in, and they'll offer this instruction. So they're getting exactly what they want in, which does no good to the jury, and then say, oh, but she cured it at the end.
So your position is there was no wording, much less this wording, there was no wording that could have cured the prejudice caused by
correct.
The ambulance.
Yes. Judge Irwin, any questions?
Judge Moore?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Counsel, good morning.
Good morning. I'm Dave Blagg. I represent Dr. Bradley Schroeder and Midwest Gastrointestinal Associates, and I will have to say that again, I hope. This case is not a law school question. It occurred in the context of a trial, and the actual evidence we're talking about is a discussion that perforation is a risk of a colonoscopy. And on the record, the 500 pages sitting there, it is all over the place that that's the case.
But that wasn't what was at issue with regard to the negligence, right? The issue was excessive force used to cause the perforation. Both experts testified that perforations were a risk. So that was out there. So the issue on negligence was, did excessive force get used to cause the perforation? So why does testimony regarding whether or not Ms. Hillier was informed of the risk, why is that relevant?
Because you have to explain the result to the jury or they're not going to buy it. If you have a bad outcome, and you have a bad outcome here, you've got to say, why did that occur? It's not because of lack of care. It's because sometimes stuff happens.
And that's okay, but take it one step further to say, I advise this patient of that risk. Why is that necessary?
That adds a couple of elements that get us to relevancy, and this is what we're talking about here is this weighing. And we go in our brief through the enormous areas that this comes in, but one thing that does in this age of informed consent is we know that the physician has to figure out what do I advise on, and the fact that that specific risk is advised upon means that it is so common that it meets the cut, and that's one thing that we have to talk about. That does a couple of things. One, it shows we're not making this up here for the purposes of explaining this. We have a reason that is so common in this type of procedure that physicians have decided they have to tell you about it. So you've got that element that goes to an additional level of credibility. And that gets us to where we are. It's a question of relevancy. It's a question of discretion, which gets us ultimately to the standard, is this clearly untenable what the judge did? Judge did more than just one thing here. One, she excluded evidence of actual consent. She kept that out. And as we point out, that was the actual objection. It was never delineated further. She allowed in evidence after keeping out consent. And after that was done, the only evidence of consent on this record came in when plaintiff introduced records of two other operations she had, which had substantial discussions of consent. She kept out consent. She allowed testimony that the doctor advises, and then she instructed the jury of the effect of that, that it doesn't affect the standard of care. And to the point you make here, we have all over the place jury instructions that say, you have this evidence here. It's relevant for this purpose. It's not relevant for this purpose. And we allow that to go through. Ruling this way in this case, you're going to have a neat opinion to write because you're going to have to delineate why those instructions don't work anymore. And I submit to you that's a fundamental change in jurisprudence.
Mr. Blagg, I want to respond to your assertion that the only objection made was with regard to using consent. Wasn't the objection consistently also referencing the motion in limine, which requested that any discussion that plaintiff was aware or made aware of the risk, or any discussion regarding informing other patients of the risk, should be excluded. And even the court acknowledged that we're trying to avoid issues of confusing the jury, that there's some insinuation that because she was informed of the risk and decided to proceed with the surgery, that she assumed the risk. That was a legitimate concern, wasn't it?
And that's why she instructed, and I think she did what she did as a whole, which comes to the discretion of the trial judge handling this particular evidence. But to your point, motions in limine don't preserve anything. And once they specify, and the specific objection is very clear, it's the word consent, the lawyer says. That's the problem. And never goes back to specify when we go further that there we have a broader objection, which is being raised here. So I don't think it was fairly, in terms of the trial judge, ever said, no, we got consent taken care of, Judge, there's still another problem here.
But wasn't rules 402 and 403 also added to the objections?
Right, and of course those are general, and the law is, of course, those general types of objections don't really preserve anything. You need specificity with regard to your objection. I mean, part of the problem I think we're dealing with here is this case and cases are not tried in a judicial petri dish.
Yeah.
We are all presumed to know the law. Part of the law is that you will be given informed consent. When we go to the doctor, we fully expect him or her to tell us the risks and benefits of the procedure. In this case, all over the place is testimony, this can't happen. So what do we have raised in the jury's mind? Why didn't the doctor tell her that? My doctor would have told me that. Every doctor would have told me that. The judge handles it by allowing the evidence in, but then instructing as to the effect of that evidence. And it's certainly relevant that this is a recognized risk. So it becomes that abuse of discretion balance, and the question is it untenable? And the answer is no. There's reason in this record to do what she did.
What do the majority of jurisdictions who have dealt with this issue, what have they done?
Depends on whether you look at it at the Hornbook level, where we're going to come up with a rule, or look at the actual cases. The Hornbook is that it's generally, the consent is generally considered irrelevant. But when you read the actual cases, and we delineate and discuss them in the brief, what you get down to is, no, it's a question for that case and the relevancy in that case and discretion in that case. So it's not an ironclad rule, we can never get into this. What it is let's look at the circumstances, let's look at the other evidence and see, and then give discretion to the trial judge who's sitting there handling these particular issues.
Isn't it true that many other states have concluded that when informed consent is not an issue, that it is an abuse of discretion to allow evidence about the risks of the procedure being, or the patient being informed of the risks of the procedure?
In reading the cases, I am unaware of a case that said it in that particular fashion. I think that's expanding what they actually say. I think what they're saying when you read those cases carefully is that in this particular instance it was. An example is a case where they said it's an abuse of discretion when the issue being tried was not the operative procedure, but did the physician make a good choice in allowing this, in recommending the surgery? Well, those are two different parts of this, and there it becomes irrelevant. So you've got to look at the actual facts. And in this particular case, as I said, the defense is, the explanation to the jury is, this can happen. And while the evidence was excluded, there's an offer of proof in there to show that even with appropriate care, it happens one to every 500,000 times. So that is an explanation to the jury that I think in order to try this case fairly for the defendant, you have to be allowed to make. And you have to be allowed to show, as I've said, that that discussion that we all expect regarding conformed consent took place if that's the case.
Why, Mr. Black? I mean, let's go back to my earlier question. If the issue of negligence pertains solely to was excessive force used, why shouldn't all the testimony have been focused on whether or not the evidence shows excessive force was used or not?
Because there's no way to quantify that excessive force. That becomes a subjective judgment, and the reason it isn't excessive force is because it happens.
And there were two competing experts in this case, one saying it was used, one saying excessive force was used, one saying it wasn't, for the jury to decide between those two things. Why is it relevant at all whether or not Ms. Hilliard consented or gave her consent or was informed of the risks of the procedure?
Because if I've noted, that comes to particularly different time with regard to this procedure. It comes before it takes place. It's not an ex post facto explanation by an expert. It's before you went in. This is such a risk that we tell you about it. So it adds credibility to that particular. And I think you've got to handle the informed consent in the situation. The only other way I can see you do it is keep the evidence out and then instruct the jury that I've kept out informed consent because it's irrelevant and here's why. Well, then we're back in the same place. We've been instructed. So what she did is allow the natural progression of the evidence to come out and instruct the jury to the applicable law. Isn't that what we do in every case?
Instead
of altering the facts and then saying, they learned these altered facts, here's the way you should rule based on the altered facts. So we have the natural progression, and she handled it with an instruction. And until today, they've never responded to the instruction. I don't see anything in the briefs about that. They want to ignore the fact that it occurred. And like I say, that's a common way of handling evidence that is kind of two-sided. You can consider it for this. You can't consider it for that. There's nothing else on it.
Thank you, counsel. How much time does Mr. Garland have?
He has 5 minutes.
I'll promise I won't take that long. So now what we have here is an argument that essentially says something along the lines, like if a motorist is pulled over and you use your insurance card, that now comes into evidence in an auto case. I mean, why are we letting irrelevant pieces of information in to show that a doctor did a job right? That's not what we're here for. We're here to make sure that the thing we're focusing on is the procedure itself. And we in the trial pit, we want some definite rules. We want to know where the boundary is. Are you going to let this stuff in, or are we going to do this every single time and have these motions in limine and judges going, well, what's the law? We need to have some definite lines drawn in the sand on these medical cases. Plaintiffs are great disadvantage economically in these cases, and what we need to know is we're not having to try cases twice. Tell us what the rules are, stick with them, and then we will stay right on point. We don't want any reversals. We don't want any mistakes, and that's why we try to take care of everything in advance so the court has an opportunity to think about them in advance. To withhold rulings on in limine really kind of defeat the purpose of an in limine. We just take them as denials. But the point that counsel made, he's an effective argument, good lawyer. The bottom line is they don't matter. They don't matter in this case. When we want to bring up informed consent, well, then it's all in. But if we don't bring it up, they can't bring it up.
This was actually initially filed with informed consent as a cause, correct? But
yes.
That was withdrawn.
Yes. Yes. We understand what the ramifications are, and we made that strategic decision, took it out, and now we're here anyway. Any questions? Thank you for your time. Request to be excused.
Thank you, counsel. You're both excused. Kilker, did you not waive oral argument?
I waived, Judge. And I was under the impression that if the other side did not waive as well, then I had to appear. But I'll stand when I waive.
You guys want to wait for a second? People just...
You need the light and noise, the white noise?
Mr. Hilger, we appreciate your appearing, but you have waived.